And welcome back to the Confessions of a Band Director podcast. This is episode 3, and it has been a while, but I'm glad to be back and hoping to do more regular podcasts. It was my New Year's resolution to do podcasts on a more regular basis. So what I have for you today is something that I hope might become a regular part of podcasts here. On Thursday afternoons, I have an opportunity to sit down and have lunch with a dear friend and colleague, Dennis Ritz, at one of our elementary buildings. He's a sixth grade teacher, but he's also the assistant band director for my program. And we always have really great lunchtime conversations, so I thought it might be a lot of fun to record some of these conversations. So what follows here today is our conversation from last Thursday afternoon, February 11th. And during this particular lunch break, we talk about early childhood education and how that might affect a student's musical aptitude. And we also go on and talk about practicing and how we encourage practicing for our students in the elementary and the senior high grade levels. So thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast. Here's today's topic.
All right.
Now, in my grad class, we've been talking a lot about how kids learn and starting to discover, and I guess I kind of knew this all along, but it's really starting to make sense because I'm seeing it from the scientific research end of things, and that is how these students' social interactions in early childhood affect their ability to learn.
Yeah.
Here's what's happened recently. Yesterday, I passed out a new piece of music at Case Avenue, to the Case Avenue band.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the third piece that the Case Avenue band is working on now since Christmas. And
okay.
We're going to be able to do a fourth for our main concert for sure. We might even be able to do five pieces. I'm talking pieces, not songs out of the book, actual
right.
arrangements. Okay.
Right.
So I passed out this piece to them yesterday, and they read it down almost flawlessly. I mean, it was really exciting from a music ed standpoint because they played the right rhythms and mostly all the right notes, and they were sight reading. And that's exciting for me because we talked about how my senior high kids' sight reading is terrible. So I know that at least at this level, they're learning how to read rhythms well. So today I come over here, and I pass out the exact same song, and these kids read it terribly. Now, I'm thinking in my mind during rehearsal, what's the difference between these two sets of kids? Same school district, different school, yes. But the first thing that enters my mind, well, maybe those kids at Case take private lessons and stuff. Maybe two of them. Out of all the 30 kids I have up there, maybe two kids take private lessons.
Right.
So that's not it. They've all been playing the same amount of time within the program. I do have some beginners here, but the beginners up at Case played it way better.
Okay.
I don't miss this group down here during the week more or less than I miss kids up there, like missing their lessons for festivals and stuff like that.
Okay.
They've had the same amount of days of instruction. So what's the difference? Why, when I come here, do students struggle so much with music, and at Case Avenue, they don't? Now, I will say it's pretty much the same at West Hill. They struggle more than the Case Avenue kids. Why is that?
Well,
and the thing I keep coming back to is that socially, they have different lives.
Yes.
And
I would agree.
And do, especially in early childhood, they have way different lives. You know what I mean?
What would be interesting is if you could find the makeup of the home. How many times have they moved since birth? How many districts they have been, how many schools they have been in. even, and I say it also, the moving, something we don't look at in education, the movement of the home, even within the same school, mm-hmm. upsets the kids' lives. And then also the makeup of the home. Mm-hmm. Who is their base? Yeah. Is it a mom and dad? And okay, if it is a single parent and a set of grandparents, has it been stable this whole time? And then the third thing is life experiences. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, including in that, were they read to as children? Mm-hmm. Were they talked to as children, or were they plopped in front of a TV? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
And the other thing I thought is, well, could it be that the kids at Case Avenue practice more? Not a chance. Those kids do not practice any more or any less than the kids here or at West Hill. They don't. Okay. Yes, there might be two or three or four kids up at Case Avenue that really do go home and practice every week.
Right.
But it's not the overwhelming majority, I'll tell you that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would have to say that is a...
That would be an impact. Awesome, like, doctorate thesis. Like, mm-hmm. a student's musical aptitude...
based on social life
based
experiences.
Early childhood.
Early childhood. Yes, I do firmly believe that. I give an example, life experience even, too. The amount of activities students are doing in the class day... Mm-hmm. is affected somewhat by the type of student, because if you have constantly more needy kids who have remediation and all that, you have to spend more time doing that. You don't have time to do the other things, mm-hmm. you know. But yeah, I would say that is a very good correlation.
It's interesting.
Yeah. So. And yet, like, these kids here have as much of the technology and the availability to that stuff as any other kid.
I think it's possibly their performance now is academically and or musically is affected more by what happened in the past in early childhood. I'm talking like before they turn one. Because that's where, according to the things that I've been reading, that's where the brain is really developing its neural pathways for and capacity for learning.
Yeah, but isn't there some kind of study, too, that by the time you hit 11, 12, a lot of your highways have already been created, and now the other ones are starting to close down?
Yeah, once you reach puberty, it's harder and harder to learn.
Well, the same thing in a home, musically, because, well, I mean, a lot of times you're making that connection of understanding the notes to the sound, but if they have not been exposed to, at home, a wide variety, if all you've been exposed to is mostly rhythm, is that something, too?
Yeah. I don't know. Though, there has to be some correlation between music reading, like actually reading notes and stuff, and... language ability. You know what I mean? There has to be some kind of...
There is, I think. Did you say between reading?
Reading music, like correlation between that and reading.
Oh, I'll give you an example, too.
And ability to effectively use language.
Well, case in point, they've done those studies where... if a child reads 15 minutes a day, how many words they go through in a year? I think I almost suppose it's in the millions. But you take that and that exposure to language, you know, I mean, reading is an effect, mm-hmm. you know, there. But that, as I said, that's interesting. And the thing you're saying about this piece, these kids did not hear the song first.
Huh, pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
The difference. You would be shocked if you heard the Case Avenue group play it yesterday. And I purposefully approached it exactly the same way. I taught it exactly the same way. I passed it out. I said the same exact thing before we played it. Hmm. So there was no variable. You know what I mean? It was amazing. But I'll tell you what, these kids here are getting leaps and bounds better.
That's good.
I mean, it's been a long process, but
I just wish they would practice.
They're starting to get it.
Yeah.
I've stopped wishing for them to practice because I just know they won't.
But then that means they're only playing one day a week.
Yep.
Until they hit high school. And then 7th grade.
That's not to say that I don't encourage it every week and I don't tell them that they need to every week. But I've just learned to not get bent out of shape about it because it's not going to happen.
Realization, because I look at my job in the district as like I'm two different people. I'm Mr. 6th grade teacher in here. But I take just as seriously, you know, I'm assistant to you in percussion. I know, but I'm just saying, it's my other hat.
Yep.
And I want it to be successful too.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my burning thing, is basic skills. And I really think, looking now, because my reading level, I was Don King's about a month ago, and I just took the half hour where the kids were taking lessons, and I just leaf through his file of drum music, and I was looking at the different stuff I've done, and really my teacher took me to about I don't think I made it quite advanced, you know, and I could see that's where my reading falters, but my passion is for basic skills. I want these kids' basic fundamentals to be strong, because and here we go back to our talk about this. If the fundamentals are strong, I don't know. It was a few years ago. Pittsburgh Post Gazette on a Sunday. If kids, and this is in the area of math, if kids have the basics of addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, know their facts, know percentages, know decimals, know fractions, they can basically function in any upper math with success. Not saying they're going to be rocket scientists, but as long as the fundamentals are there, and that's success. It goes back. I'm thinking about that I'm just shooting a bull now, but drifting.
Well, you know.
But man, it's so important.
I've just learned to accept, you and I both tell the kids, go practice, go practice, go practice. But as much as we can say that, I've changed my thinking about it. They're just not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have them there and they're captive in our rehearsals, we have to get as much done as possible and as much quality rehearsal done as possible.
Okay.
So often, leading up to this point, I've been frustrated, and if my kids couldn't play something, I would just refuse to work on it with them. I'd say, all you have to do is go home and practice this. And that stuff would go undone, and it's just not going to happen.
Okay, then you say that. So, I want to add this because I'm coming, it's going to come shorter, I've got to get the kids. But anyway, I want to ask you this. Did at one point you had to come to a realization after you started teaching that reality says this is the highest level most of these kids will perform at musically? I cannot expect them to go to the level I want them to. I
No.
desire them to.
No. I've never lowered my expectations for them. However, I've altered the route that I'm going to take to get them there.
Huh.
In other words, if I have X level of performance expectation to them, my old pathway used to be, go practice it.
Okay.
Go practice it. Go practice it. You just have to do it on your own. And I realized that doesn't work. That doesn't get them here. My new pathway is, well, okay, they're not going to go practice it, but how can I still get them to this level of performance? What am I going to do to get them to that level? So my new pathway is still tell them, go practice it. But now in rehearsal, I will say, here is how you need to practice this. This is what will help you to learn it. Because I realized something. When I was in high school, I had no idea how to practice. And nobody ever taught me how. And it took me 2.5 years in college to figure out how to do it. But once I did, I improved exponentially more quickly. And I think what happens is, sometimes they do go home and try to practice it, but they don't get any better. So then they're frustrated.
Okay, so...
And so now I teach them how to practice through rehearsal, during rehearsal. I still don't think they're going home and doing it, but then while as I'm showing them the technique of how to practice, they're actually practicing it during rehearsal.
Okay, so then, for example, are you telling them things like, well, of course, this is more elementary. Do this exercise 4 times. Do this one 4 times. Do this one 4 times.
Run I'm going to publish twice. A book. Here are the 3 keys to practicing at any level.
Okay.
1, work on small sections. Let's say you have a 4 major phrase that you can't play. It's very technical, maybe. Break it down to 2 notes. When you can do those notes perfectly, then you add the 3rd note. So you break it down into small sections. Maybe you have a phrase where you just 2 notes just aren't laying right. You focus on those 2 notes only. Okay?
Okay.
Then you go slow. Maybe that should be the first one. Go slow.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely slow. So slow that you don't make a mistake. Because if you're making a mistake, you're practicing the mistake. Jim Mumble said, when you practice at home, you should never make a mistake. Sounds ridiculous, but think about it. He says, no. Go so slow that you never make a mistake. That way your mind, mentally and physically,
you're
you are
focused.
Never practicing a mistake. You're
wow.
practicing it perfectly.
That's cool.
And then repeat it, repeat it, repeat it. So when you can do it 50 times in a row perfectly slow, you with the metronome, you take the metronome and move it up 1 more notch. And then you practice it at that tempo. And when you do that 50 times in a row perfectly, then you take the metronome up another tick. So go slow,
mm-hmm.
work on small sections, repeat, repeat, repeat. Those are the 3
wow.
golden rules to practicing. And I tell elementary kids that, and we'll do it in elementary lessons, and the kids learn it so much more quickly. And you think the opposite's going to happen. Oh, my God, I'm going so slow. But they can learn a 1 major thing in 4 minutes so much more quickly than they would ever learn going, and they're not frustrated either. It's amazing.
There's a gem for your machine right there.
But that totally works.
Okay, then our next discussion next time, I want to discuss metronome again.
Right.
And whatever else you want to talk about.
You have been listening to the Confessions of a Band Director podcast. My name is Doug Butchie. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.